It's Friday, and that must mean the Mincing Rascals. Wait, that just did not sound right, did it, Kristen McQuarrie?
Start over.
You
got to get the Friday.
Oh, there she just did it. Kristen McQuarrie on the editorial board. It's Friday. I'm just not going to do it.
Okay.
It's Friday.
That's the way. Kristen McQuarrie from the editorial board of Chicago Tribune. Eric Zorn, columnist for the Tribune. I'm Steve Bertrand from WGN Radio, and we are missing our chief rascal, or among the rascals, John Williams, who is jetting off to Paris right about now with a group of WGN listeners, but we shall mince on without him. Welcome to all of you. Speak.
I'm not used to not hearing John in my headphones.
Let's start, Kristen, and you talk a little bit about what's going on at Chicago Public Schools, because Karen Lewis, who calls Mayor Emanuel a bully, had quite a few strong words for Governor Rauner this week.
You could say so. Comparing the governor to ISIS or ISIL, a group that, you know, straps suicide bombs onto young children, beheads Christians. And she kind of doubled down on social media after her remarks. She was speaking at the City Club and basically defended what she said. She did get some pushback. But, you know, this is Karen Lewis, the leader of the Chicago Teachers Union. She's very colorful. She went through a period in her life when she was a stand-up comic. So I think she
should try humor.
Well, right. I mean, but she was in a friendly audience. It was mostly, I think, supporters and CPS and CTU officials at this luncheon. So they did laugh. They applauded. They gave her a standing ovation. But, you know, this is not the way to negotiate a contract, is to go out in public and say outrageous things. And it always has bothered me that she gets away with it, that she is not held accountable.
It's not a way to live a life. I mean, I'm sorry. That to me is hate speech.
She's already called him a sociopath, right? I mean, she's always turning
up to 11. That's a diagnosis. But, you know, calling someone a member of ISIS, that's hateful speak. And it's just jaw-dropping that there's not some sort of outcry about the language that she used.
But there has,
and you know I'm no Rauner fan.
Has been some outcry about it. And, you know, but the thing is, like, as Kristen points out, she's not really held accountable for it, and she's not going to take it back. And the conversation will roll on. And
will it help her?
No, it doesn't help her. I think it actually contributes in some small ways to marginalizing her cause, that she doesn't sound like the reasonable person in the room, which is what you want to sound like if you're going to be negotiating in public, which is sort of what they do even when they say they're not doing it, right?
I don't think she actually represents rank-and-file teachers when she says things like that. I mean, teachers want more, you know, control in their classrooms, less standardized testing, supportive principals, fewer mandates from the state and the city. They want to be left alone. They want to teach. She doesn't represent any of that. She tries to be super radical. You know, this contract that they rejected, that the CPS offered earlier this year, is generous given the city's financial condition. Teachers do need to start paying more toward their own pensions. And she already slapped it down, and we're looking at a possible strike in mid-month, right, May?
Yeah, it's phenomenal to me that, you know, so much is made of people who work with children and that they need to set the example. So the bar is so much higher for them, that's so much easier for them to be punished or fired. And you have the head of the teachers union, you know, just throwing firebombs like this.
I'm not sure I would go along completely with Kristen's assessment that Karen Lewis doesn't care about education, the classroom, and so on. She would frame it as like she wants to continue to enhance the professionalism and pay of the teachers so that they can do that kind of work. But it looks as though her first interest is in, you know,
well, one of the issues,
salaries instead.
I should even bring this up because I'm not sure exactly where it is. But one of the issues is, right, the Constitution or the contract says that they are to pay a part of their pension payments, right? And for years, it's just been part of the deal that CPS would pick up that share. Right.
Well,
and this
right.
time they say we can't afford to do that. And, you know, to me, as a guy who's paying for part of his own pension and doing all that, it's nice that you got the deal in the past. But the law says you pay for it. They can't afford it anymore. That's something you're going to have to pay for.
Right. If Karen Lewis delivered that message to her members, then they would be more reasonable about it. But she doesn't. She just keeps referring to it as a pay cut.
It is a pay cut. That's why she refers to it that way.
But the deal that they were getting builds in, I think it's 9 or 12% raises. They will basically come out even once they phase in the pension pickup.
Right.
And I don't even care if you want to say it's a pay cut. that taxpayers can no longer afford to pick up the 7% that we have been picking up and that teachers have not been putting into their own.
Right, but they gave them that 7% in lieu of a pay raise 30 years ago, and it's been baked into the contract ever since.
And they continue to get pay raises, though.
Right, but at the time they gave him that instead of a pay raise.
Yes,
so, I mean it's a little, it's kind of like a shell game. It was done in a thing to hide the raise that they gave them. So it's coming back to haunt them. But you know, it amounts to a 7% pay cut. So she's right about that. I think if you frame the contract
phased in over like 6 or 7 years.
Yeah, but if you phrase it that way. But anyway. I do think this whole thing is headed toward a train wreck. I don't see the resolution, given that they're rejecting moderation or mediation. I'm sorry, they're rejecting mediation.
And moderation
and,
too.
And they rejected the fact finder's report. I don't know where how they land the plane, so to speak.
And what happened with the principal? There was a principal who was fired, right? A big critic of Mayor Emanuel this week.
That was on Wednesday. Blaine Elementary School on the North Side.
He wasn't fired. He was reassigned.
He was reassigned, but he was basically kicked to the curb. He was a very controversial guy. He was very politically active, opposed to the park tests, and he'd organized parents to help their kids opt out of these tests, and a harsh critic of Mayor Emanuel's. He was behind Chuy Garcia's campaign. He was, speaking out.
So is this City Hall?
Pardon me?
Is this City Hall?
City Hall says no. It's not that Mayor Emanuel had nothing to do with it.
Mm-mm. So they're totally unrelated, Steve. Totally okay. Unrelated.
How would you even say such a thing?
Gosh.
Okay, let's go national. Donald Trump as Ronald Reagan. Because that's what they're rolling out this week, right? Trump wins in New York. He's going to do well Tuesday in the primaries coming up. And his new handlers and supporters are saying he's going to run like Ronald Reagan, in that everyone was afraid of Reagan in 79. Everyone said he was inexperienced, he'd be bad for the country. And lo and behold, he turned out to be a great president. Are people going to buy that?
Gosh, I don't know. I mean, Trump's new campaign manager has managed to keep him on message. If you saw his victory acceptance speech after the New York primary, it was much more toned down and
for a day.
For a day. Right.
The next day comes back with the same stuff.
Lion Ted.
Yeah, I think, a Ronald Reagan comparison is quite a stretch.
Well, is it? I mean, I think they could get some play because, as I remember, I was in high school and people were scared to death of Reagan.
I was a baby.
And they said, fine, that's right. Cubs have
I
a better
not,
record.
I'm kidding.
But, people were scared to death of Reagan. This is going to be the end of us all, blah, blah, blah. And it turned out not to be so. So for people with a long enough memory, if he can wrap himself in that cloak,
that's going to be
a
difficult wrap. I was interested though. Yesterday morning, Thursday morning, he gave an appearance. It was an appearance, a town hall kind of thing on the Today Show, I think it was.
Mm-hmm.
And they asked him about the North Carolina transgender bathroom law, and he gave an extremely reasonable answer that was shocking to me. It was like that he likes to just throw red meat out all the time, and he said, I don't think we needed that law. Things were going fine. Let people use the bathroom they want to use. We've been doing that for a while. It's no big deal. And I just thought, oh no, now he's getting reasonable.
But that's the thing. He sounds reasonable to you. A liberal, that's not reasonable to people in Alabama,
Ted Cruz,
or Georgia.
Yeah, they
and
jumped all over it.
But that's the wonder.
It's tack into the middle, though.
Maybe it's
where
the beauty or the wonder, the fact that, we might end up with two Democrats running in November.
Well, the night of his victory speech in New York, there was a man standing behind him who was the Republican nominee for governor last time around, and he is a hard right Tea Party guy. And so people were saying that Trump was actually sending a message by having this person standing right behind him during his victory speech, that if you think he's going to go to the middle, he's not. This is one of his top, advisors and allies.
Right. So, that was Palomino.
Paladino,
right. Mm-hmm. That's like saying people are trying to send a message by having Jesse Jackson behind him. No, Jesse just finds a way to stand there.
All right. You're correct.
Let's go to the Democrats, because people wondered whether there would be a kinder, gentler Bernie Sanders after being trounced in New York. It doesn't look like there's any way he can win the nomination. And he kind of came out swinging this week again, too.
Well, he went home first.
He went home.
He had to change his underwear.
Just like Ben Carson going home to Florida.
But then he came back pretty strongly. And you know, he did not let up on Hillary Clinton.
See, here's the question to me is not if Bernie Sanders is going to bow out. It's not even really when he's going to bow out, but it's how he's going to bow out. The math is not there for him. It hasn't been for a while, but it really isn't there now after getting his butt kicked in New York. And he's probably going to lose next Tuesday pretty badly as well. The question is he going to go down swinging, trying to get his supporters all riled up and I'll never vote for Hillary at all, write in your name? Or is he going to do what Hillary Clinton did? And she did stay with the Democratic race until, was it June last time? Mm-hmm. But ultimately, at the convention, she stood up and said, you know, while they're doing the roll call, and she moved that the convention nominate Barack Obama, you know, by acclaim.
Right.
And people stop the roll call. And that was a real show of unity. And I think it really helped bring the party together. And the question is he going to do that, or is he going to try to, you know, keep inflaming his supporters?
Is it too late for him to get on the ballot as a socialist?
I don't know. I think probably he could get some signatures and get on the ballot.
Another thing that Donald Trump said at the Today Show town hall, he was asked about Harriet Tubman being placed on the $20 bill. And he said, no, it's purely political correctness that Andrew Jackson has been on the 20 for a long, 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 long time, I think he said, and did a lot of really great things for this country, and that he didn't think bowing to political correctness for Harriet Tubman was the right thing to do. A lot of other people disagree. I just love the fact that art and theater can change our currency, because it seems like the success of Hamilton is what rescued him on the $10 bill.
Yeah, Hamilton was toast. It was all the conversation a year ago was all about who's going to be on the 10.
Right.
And Hamilton was gone, and it was a question, you know, they were saying, was it going to be Rosa Parks? Is it going to be Harriet Tubman? They had this, you know, list of people who it might be, but it was all Hamilton. And then all of a sudden, the Broadway play becomes a smash hit, wins a Pulitzer and everything else that you can win, I guess. And Hamilton's there. So, and Jackson, and even at the time, people were having conversations about Jackson being not exactly the kind of guy you want your kids to emulate. You know, I have to say
I am a descendant of Andrew Jackson. So
we probably all are.
Well, fine. You take credit for it, too. So I have a little personal skin in this game.
Okay. But he was like a great, 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 great,
I really
great,
don't
great,
know.
Great uncle.
I had a grandmother who told me once, and I choose to believe her.
Yeah.
But he was probably the biggest rascal of the faces of on the currency, right? I mean, if anyone deserved to go, it was probably Andrew Jackson.
But is he staying on the back of the bill, or is that still in dispute? That
there are redesigns at the back,
front,
right? Right.
He gets reassigned to the back, which I think is actually, you know, he is part of our country's history. And just as we can't go around and destroy every statue or piece of art or something that represents, you know, that had a slave owner in it, for the same reason, I think he should be on the back. It's kind of a blending of what our country, where we started and where we are.
Well, and it is an affirmative move. It's not a negative move, right? It's an affirmative move to put a woman on the currency. It wasn't as if there was a big movement to take Jackson off. Right. But
well,
I agree
but
with you.
But some people are saying that this is just a half measure because she only gets, you know, the front of the bill.
Who is on the $2 bill? Is it
Jefferson?
Jefferson.
Yeah.
Is anyone? I haven't seen a $2 bill in years. I guess they're still around, but
we collect them at my house.
You do.
Mm-hmm.
A lot of people
give
say
them out
save.
At Halloween.
They say we save them, but you collect them.
Yeah. If I go to the bank sometimes and I'll ask if they have any $2 bills. And my kids one year had a lemonade stand while I was at work, and they gave away a bunch of the $2 bills. It was very devastating.
Well, and that's another thing.
Business technique.
Donald Trump suggested that we come up with a new denomination for Harriet Tubman.
Oh.
Like the $17 bill. I don't know what it would be. But he said rather than get rid of Andrew Jackson, maybe a whole new denomination.
Well,
yeah,
but I don't think this is the conversation that, I mean, that Kristen is introducing here, which is about, you know, the old statues of the Confederacy,
right, yeah, right,
in New Orleans and these monuments and buildings named after slaveholders.
And what was happening to Woodrow Wilson at Princeton?
Yes,
right.
Exactly. And so, but that's really not this conversation, because it's more a question of, you know, we want to spread the honor around and maybe rotate people through on these. Rather than say, you know, forever and ever now you get to be on the $10 bill or $20 bill. Maybe, you know, every 15, 20 years we change it, put somebody new on. Prince.
Hey.
Yeah, Prince. How about Prince? It was.
Do we have a cause of death yet?
No, the autopsy was today, and the medical examiner's office was very careful to say they're not going to release any preliminary findings. So it could be several days or weeks, which means we'll have to wait for TMZ to get it later in the day and we'll find out.
TMZ has its theories, though, right?
Well, I haven't read too much about the. There have been a few, but you know, he landed in Moline last week, mm-hmm. right?
With flu-like symptoms.
Mm-hmm. And I remember thinking, am I going to do this story or not in the newscast that morning? Because it just was hinky. You don't land at Moline. If you're flying from Atlanta to the Twin Cities, why do you take the time to slow down and approach at Moline when you were 2 hours away from landing at your home?
Mm-hmm. Unless it's really bad.
Unless it's acute, right? Mm-hmm. And he was only on the ground for a few hours, and they took off again. So, yeah.
And he was supposed to be... a teetotaler, right? He didn't do any drugs, didn't drink. That was the word on him, right?
That he was a pretty straight-laced guy, yeah. Right, but he also is a guy wrapped in mystery, so I don't know. But what strikes me about this, and I was of the age of, you know, in his wheelhouse, really. I was in college in the early 80s. I know, Kristen, you were just in kindergarten. But I never was a Prince guy. I just never quite... got into that, and the whole Purple Rain thing, it never resonated with me. So I always looked at him from a distance as knowing that he was a wonder and that he was an immense talent and this force of creativity, but I was sort of never in the cyclone. And it's so, as he dies, it's just kind of an odd place to be. I don't know if you guys were big fans or not.
I was a pretty big fan in the 80s. I listened to a lot of his music in the 80s. But I have to say, when he died, I was thinking, when was the last time I actually, you know, right. affirmatively listened to something by him? And it's been a very long time. So, you know,
I would agree.
But of course, that's my, you know, I hadn't listened to David Bowie either for a long time.
Right.
I was just going to say that. I feel kind of left out when, you know, I wasn't a David Bowie fan either. I mean, I appreciated Prince. He did. I think was it his on his first album, he played every instrument.
27 instruments.
He just kept overlaying the music with different instruments. I mean, that's just a phenomenal talent.
He had some. Yeah, people were comparing him to Mozart. It's probably a little overblown, but he was a phenomenal musical talent. He wasn't just this performer. You know,
an activist. I mean, and a guy who, you know, all of the talk about how he sexed everything up, but he sexed women up with power. In many ways. And after the Freddie Gray death in Baltimore, you know, he did that free concert there. Mm-hmm. So he was a guy who was not just creative, he was active in making a difference. And so I'm sure we'll learn more about it, but just a terrible loss. And, you know, everyone's talking so much about it. I'm shocked at how many people I've talked to in the past 24 hours who have seen Prince in concert.
Mm-hmm.
Either of you?
No,
me either.
I have not seen him, but I didn't even know he was still doing concerts. But wasn't he on his way back from one when he had to do the emergency landing?
Yeah, he'd performed in Atlanta. But so there's that. I don't know if any other comments on the memory of Prince or
unless you want to sing a little ditty for us, little Red Corvette, anything.
It's
anyone?
Just been such Any-takers? A bad year. I mean, okay. the loss of Merle Haggard, which we didn't touch on this on mm-hmm. this podcast.
We didn't, Derek.
We didn't, but Merle Haggard was one I did listen
yeah.
to. More than these others. But,
should I congratulate you on the no-hit pitching wonder?
I think it would be gracious of you, yes.
Okay.
Oh, good. That would be a nice segue, too. Jake Arrieta with the
yes.
no-hitter, phenomenal. And, you know, they scored 16 runs. People were talking about the fact that the Cubs weren't hitting. They scored 16 runs, which is just amazing. And the White Sox aren't doing too badly either.
No, they're not doing too badly.
Don't
but
patronize her.
No, but they really are. It's just amazing.
It's a fun start to the season for sure. And I was watching the end of the Cubs game last night and very excited and happy that, you know, once that moment happens and you realize it's going to be a no.
So let's segue then into our bit of culture, our recommendation of programs or things, because I was watching a film last night, a film called Jim. And it's the story of James Foley, the American journalist who was killed by ISIS. And this is a terrible segue, but I'm watching this film, and on my phone I see it's the seventh inning, it's the eighth inning, and the movie's moving toward its completion. And I wouldn't turn this movie off to tune in to Arrieta to see the no-hitter. I'm like, this is too powerful, this is too strong. I'm not going to dilute it by watching the last 10 minutes later. Now, as it turned out, the movie ended just in time for me to see the ninth inning. But for me, this week all ties together because when I hear Karen Lewis refer to Governor Rauner as a recruit for ISIS, and then I see this film about James Foley, this remarkable young man, and you know, we shared Marquette University in the same college together, and what he did and the sort of life he lived and how he died and how he was imprisoned and tortured by ISIS for well over a year before we knew he was in prison and killed. When I see that and learn about that, and then I hear these sort of trivial name-calling episodes by Karen Lewis, it just makes me furious. So that's my recommendation, is this Jim. Film, Jim, and it's on HBO On Demand. And it's a beautiful film about a wonderful family that went through just a terrible, and a remarkable guy. This guy, James Foley, was so handsome. He was so, you know, this ruggedly handsome guy, and yet he seemed to sort of be a misfit in the world. Good guy, wonderfully likable guy, but couldn't quite find where he belonged until he ended up with these video cameras or digital cameras in war zones. Jim, mm-hmm. How about you?
I'll bump it over to Eric because, of course, mine is, you know, so cheap compared to that.
Mine is a book, actually. It's unusual for me. I'm usually endorsing like a pocket comb or something, but it's a book. It's called Movie Freak, My Life Watching Movies by Owen Gleiberman, who is the film critic for the BBC now. He was for many years the film critic for Entertainment Weekly, but he was also my colleague at the Michigan Daily and my friend in high school.
Oh, nice.
And I got the book, and he reads the audiobook. And it's a fascinating look. He tells the story of his life and how the kind of strange qualities of his growing up and his childhood and so on turned him into someone who's just obsessed with movies. And so I learned a lot about this guy, who I consider a pretty good friend, from this book. And I had him read it to me in the audiobook. And it's really interesting. He's got a lot of really quirky opinions about movies and talks a lot about the film industry and films themselves. And it's called, again, Movie Freak by Owen Gleiberman, just out by Hachette Publishing. So.
Great. Well,
okay,
this is
you put it off long enough.
I know. Well, this is a shout out to Ra Joy. He's the executive director of Change Illinois. He listens to our podcast, and he reminded me that it was about time that I offered a cocktail recipe. So my summer cocktail, this is really low calorie, so it's good for when you guys need to get out in your Speedos or your thongs, whichever you prefer.
It better be really low calorie. It better be negative calorie.
You take, surgical.
It's called a Frescarita. So you buy Fresca, which is a no-calorie soda. You add Patron and lime juice. That's it. And it is a delicious, not too sweet, low-calorie margarita.
Do you need a little umbrella to go in it or anything?
Nah, skip the umbrella.
I'm getting that. You know, you get that little sour, quirky feel in the back of your chin or your jaw. Do you ever get that feeling?
No.
You never get that, like...
No, I do, yeah.
Yeah, I'm just thinking...
Just hearing about it.
Fresca and anything else. Like,
really? Your face is all crunched up like I just
offered. So we should mention that...
You said Fresca.
It's delicious.
That Kristen Decker has been filming this for Facebook live stream. And so it's going to be on the Mincing Rascals Facebook page?
Right. So you just missed it because it was on live.
So you just...
No, but it'll be recorded on a recorded version
recorded.
As well.
One of the things I thought might be fun to try is to see if people want to send us voice messages. They could send it to me, ericzorn@gmail.com. Just like if you got a question or something you want, a topic or a comment, if you can do an audio thing and maybe we can get...
So if they're drink recipes, they'll write to Kristen?
Great.
Yeah.
Right.
We're going to turn this into conservative talk radio. I feel it.
Okay. Well,
rant of the day.
Let's put a wrap on.
If your question is shorter than 15 seconds, you can submit it through the WGN Radio app.
Through the WGN Radio
okay,
app.
Okay. So if your question
That'll
is.
That'll be good, actually. Shorter than 15 seconds is good.
Shorter than 15 seconds. Submit it through the WGN Radio app.
So if your question is shorter than 15 seconds, you can submit it through the WGN Radio app. So that's another way to do it. All right, time for the Mincing Rascals to say bon voyage.
Au revoir.
Au revoir, Jean Williams, Jean-Pierre Williams. Hopefully he'll be back. I put together the trip, and I'm not sure when they're coming back. I think it's a five-day trip.
Together the trip over there, but you didn't arrange for them to come back.
There's no fare back. I think they're back next Friday, so we'll talk to John then.
Great. Talk to you then.
See ya.
Producer for The Rascals, Kristen Decker, and engineer Bob Ferguson. You can subscribe to the Mincing Rascals podcast on iTunes or listen to it on the WGN Plus app or WGNplus.com. The Mincing Rascals is distributed by the WGN Plus Podcast Network.